The following talk was given by Jed Larson at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on January 4, 2026. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And Happy New Year. Yes, it's a new one. It's a nice time of year. We just had our solstice sitting not too long ago in this beautiful snow, and the cool weather just carries a certain quality to it, doesn't it? It's a quiet time of year where the snow is muffling the sounds and all the animals are tucked away, and it's you know, we have a time of year where light is increasing as we move forward, kind of have this positive energy that's coming in to our experience. And then also we have other things, New Year's resolutions, where we have kind of a, you know, mind for freshening things up, maybe looking at different ways of bringing in new things for our life, ways to become more healthy, different things that we may have our eyes on, working towards different things. And I wanted to look at Buddhism too in a similar way. When we come to Buddhism, I think it also has this kind of feeling of something new, you know, something is offering us that we don't quite, we haven't heard before. And of course, when we start studying Buddhism, we'll hear about, say, the Four Noble Truths. We'll hear about dukkha and how dukkha gives us some perhaps new insights about understanding the human situation. So, you know, you think of all these different things that happen that come up in our life where there's, you know, a certain amount of turbulence that can come up in different ways. Even if we're sitting in the dentist waiting room there and a sense of boredom kind of settles in, or you're in a big rush and you realize that you don't have the car keys, they're not where you normally have them, and you need to get out the door immediately. There's just so many different things, material things that we may kind of be drawn to. So we'll have a lot of experiences of different ups and downs, and I think that's one of the apt definitions of dukkha, this sense of up, down, this kind of vacillation that can happen with our life. And of course, it's very natural to want to understand what that is, what the source of that is, and find a resolution to that. So I wanted to also talk about teachings and maybe reframe them just a little bit, and the sense that the study, when we study something like dukkha, or this up-down quality, I feel it's helpful to remind ourselves what we're really talking about here in terms of what the practice is, and that is basically to actually pay attention to our life. So in other words, dukkha kind of expresses how this up and down can happen for us. But actually, the practice is to actually come back to our life. It's actually to pay attention to our life. So it's not so much determining what is good or bad about our life, or defining this kind of vacillation as something bad and it needs to be resolved or something along those lines. But to actually get to a clearer view of what practice is, and that is to really be here completely for a life, but then not be fooled about the source of this up down that happens for us. I was thinking of a little example here of how a woodworker, sort of maybe an example of how things come up in our life in so many different ways that really it's hard to pin down our experiences in one way or another. Like a woodworker making a chair, you know, there's probably some pretty specific ways to make a chair. And I remember watching a show on PBS, The Woodwright Shop, and he would build chairs kind of with no mechanical or no electric tools. So he'd build one chair, but then he'd build another chair in a completely different way. And it's kind of like one is distinctly different technique than the other, and you can't really say which is the right way to make a chair. Is this chair better than this one? This may have different qualities than another one. So our life shows up in many different ways. I remember in art class in high school, we were looking at Van Gogh's painting of a room in a bed in their chair. I think it's a pretty famous painting. It goes, the name of it is Bedroom in Arles. So it is, if you're familiar with Van Gogh's paintings, there can often be sort of a warping of the dimensions. The image that's being represented can be different than what a realistic image would be. So in that case, the chair that's sitting, and I remember asking my art teacher about that, the dimensions of the chair, according to like the what's the perspective, vanishing line of perspective, I can't remember the exact, where you're supposed to make the squares work exactly, you know, it doesn't work like that in the Van Gogh. And I was sort of asking about that. And he was saying that it's there to kind of express a different feeling, or it's meant to do something other than be just perfectly realistic. So there you have another example of a chair. You know, which one's bad? It's completely wrong in some ways, but it's completely right at the same time. So these examples, I think, have corollaries in our life where things can come up and we can really interpret things very differently depending on our perspective or the context in which something arises. And here it's also helpful, I think, that in terms of meditation, we can really see that there's no good or bad meditation when we really get down to understanding these teachings. It really is not trying to give us some sort of idea of good and bad. So when we sit in meditation, maybe we have a pretty wily mind. We're jumping all around, thinking about the past and the future and whatever it might be. The point is to really be here for our life, and not making some sort of judgment about what we think is going on. We can just actually just set that aside. So this study really helps to see what's going on in our life. The study of, say, the Four Noble Truths, to understand dukkha, to understand that when we begin to steer towards one thing or another, you know, if we're in the dentist's office and we want to be somewhere else, this tendency to move towards the things that we like and away from the things that we dislike, as the Buddha says, not to get what we want is suffering. He also says that the origin of suffering is craving, seeking delight here and there, that is craving for pleasure. So, as I say, study helps to understand what's happening in our life, just to have a clear understanding of what goes on for us. It's not that craving is right or wrong. It's just to clearly understand what desire is. So dukkha isn't telling us what's good or bad. It is just simply explaining what happens for us, which is, I think, a kind of a very non-judgmental, actually, type of teaching. It's has this open-heartedness to how our life shows up, even if we're sitting in meditation and all kinds of crazy thinking is going on. You know, this is about being kind with ourselves and understanding the nature of how we are steering, you know, tend to steer things one way or another, or want to steer them. So, you know, I guess maybe the talk is somewhat focused on the idea of resolution or resolving. And are what works? Are we kind of want to work towards something different in a new year, something along those lines? And here, Buddhism, I think, presents something that's different maybe than what we are normally used to hearing in terms of what works. And when I really reflect on this, the teachings are pointing, I believe, us back to experience itself. So the question of what works or what doesn't work comes up in life, and then we'll kind of think about, you know, what seems to be causing a problem, and then we'll try to get rid of it here. But in Buddhism, what works is, so to speak, what works is this complete working. It's actual experience. Our interpretation of our experience maybe shows up in a lot of different ways. You know, things may go the way we intend them to or not. And it may seem like peace or tranquility is pretty elusive. But again, the practice is getting us back to just really being here, paying attention to our life. So when we care for the activity of our mind and we see this steering that happens for us, then we can really understand the nature of our mind. Without judgment, we can see this tendency of steering. So in studying Buddhism, we're actually studying our life, which Suzuki Roshi mentioned. That's sort of a quote from him. And when we study our life, we notice what happens for us. So
I have to go.
We become acquainted with our life.
I have to go.
Oh.
I have to go eat breakfast.
Oh. We're trying to, guess we got the mute going.
Jolie Martin, I will call you after. I will call you on your iPad after.
And I should mention, life shows up in unexpected.
Okay, so just wait a second.
Ways that you don't predict. So that's really what it is about, you know, paying attention to these unexpected things that come up for us. We're studying our, you know, to understand what this study is to understand our life. So we're acquainted with our life continually when it comes up in unpredictable ways or mundane ways or, you know, however it does come up. The teachings are pointing to this unending experience, actually. Not about finding a culprit to solve necessarily. And I should mention, those New Year's resolutions are great too. You know, that can perfectly fold into what our practice is, you know, to have an idea of how we want to improve our health or something along those lines. But here we have something a little bit, or quite a bit different. You know, it's focusing on directly this immediacy of our life. That's what the practice is pointing to. So this working is like, it has nothing to do with good or bad. I think of going back to this theme of art, if you've done watercolor, where you take the brush, you know, maybe it's the first time you've ever tried it, and you put some water in the dish with the color, and then you drop the brush into the paint, and then when you touch down on the paper, that watercolor just seamlessly glides onto the paper. So the teachings, again, are not getting at what works or doesn't work necessarily. It's this truth of immediacy. So when experience is showing up exactly as it is, that's what our life is. So this paintbrush touching on paper is what Buddhism is getting us to, you know, watch our life as it's happening. Not getting caught in an idea of trying to define it a certain way or thinking of it as a certain thing, but just direct experience, just pure experience. When you look closely, there actually is no before or after with this, you know, paint on the paper, just that. And you lift up the brushes in the air. Our experience does not show before or after. So whatever it is, it's completely inexplicable. It's actually perfectly resolved. Every experience that comes up. So the study of dukkha, for example, is again helpful for us to keep watch on our life, to understand what's happening. And also we can notice then that practice is very much necessary. And practice is to find this continual attunement to responding with our life. The Buddha has a quote here that I thought was helpful in recognizing that this is a practice of understanding. He said, "This is the noble truth of dukkha. Thus, practitioners, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me a vision, a knowledge, wisdom, true knowledge, and light." So here, this quote, I think, reminds us that this noble truth is what it's really getting at is understanding. You know, it shows us this up-down quality when we are trying to steer things in certain ways. That's just, it is one and the same thing. Steering, you know, trying to steer our life, then this vacillation will happen. So dukkha is pointing to that. But here, the Buddha is talking about what things unheard before. So he's talking about a teaching that is radically different than, you know, trying to make our life a certain way. It's actually about this arising of vision, knowledge, wisdom, true knowledge. So it's just direct understanding directly. So those New Year's resolutions that come up, I think one thing for me when I think about those, particularly in the for the things that, you know, like you buy the Nordic track or something, and it's like, you know, it's almost like embedded in that is this sense that, oh, I only get one shot per year. You know, I get it, you know, you're going to try to do this. And then if you fail, it's almost like you feel like you got to wait till next year to start back up, or, you know, it's just like you bought the Nordic track. So if you're not using it, you'll find something else to do. But maybe that's just me or something. It's because I think New Year's resolutions can actually be, you know, we set our heart and mind on being healthier, and then we can actually, you know, we may stop doing it a little bit, then we come back to it. It may take a little while to get it instituted in our life. So you know, the usual aspects of our life where we try to make improvements and so forth. It takes a bit of effort. But here again, we're not talking about success or failure with practice. You know, we're not talking about an exertion of willpower with this particular type of practice here. What we're getting at here is continually resuming or coming back to what's fresh. You know, so it's not a one-shot deal. It's like every moment, you know, just this continual refreshment. So when we actually just do something, we convey our understanding of the directness of what is happening. And this is it. You know, we're, when we actually do something, that truth of experience is undeniable. So, to quote Norm Randolph, a teacher from Dharma Field here, he would often remind us to resume awareness just for the sake of awareness. We don't actually need to add anything to that. So our activity can be this continual attunement in no matter what situation in our life, realize this full working that's happening. So we recognize the immediacy of whatever it might be. You know, we're painting. There's that complete immediacy, whatever it is that comes up in really anything. What's happening in our life is unquestionable, actually. It can't be explained. Even the most mundane things that happen for us, they're directly working. You know, this whole picture is directly working. So this is a teaching that's talking about something that's beyond achievement or not, beyond any type of judgment. So it's awareness itself, just reality itself. Awareness completely proves itself out for us. There's nothing that we need to do to make reality work. It's completely proving itself in the most complete way. It's always this instantaneous experience, completely thoroughgoing. So in staying with this practice and really being here, then this tendency of ours to want to steer things one way or another, or sort of pigeonhole how we think about things, about how we think about life, just staying here and really bringing our whole heart to this, then the pigeonholing can kind of just drop away of its own accord. Or the sense of wanting to steer things can sort of just fade away of its own accord. So we're here for what's happening, you know, this undivided working just as it is. So that's what our practice is. And I say that's what our practice is. But of course, what our practice is what our life is. And it may kind of seem like those are different things, but ultimately we can realize that practice actually, that's, you know, the complete life picture. You know, it's nothing other than what is going on. So I think that's encouraging in some ways to know that practice is not separate at all from our life. So that's pretty much all I have for today's talk. I don't know if anybody has any questions or comments, or if you want to talk about your New Year's resolutions. You want to talk about them, or we want to talk about them now, right? But we don't want to talk about them in February. No, I didn't really, I wasn't planning on doing that actually.
Thank you. Well, I just want to comment that I heard that about 55% of New Year's resolutions carry forth.
Okay. That's pretty good. Half seems pretty good. I don't know if my record's quite half.
Mine's definitely not.
Yeah. I'm below the average, I think. But then, yeah, it sort of depends on who's gauging that too, right? Okay, yeah. Yeah, like I say, it's a nice time of year to think about renewal and, yeah, it's just a very natural aspect. I think we see nature, you know, just doing that so seamlessly that things are changing, and then we see spring coming in, and we can kind of act in similar ways. And so, yeah, thanks for that. It's interesting.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Yeah, thank you. See, I heard this saying, and I think I'm saying this correctly, before enlightenment, cutting wood and carrying water, after enlightenment, carrying water and cutting wood. Is that kind of what you just said? Am I understanding that I guess you'd call it a koan? Am I understanding that right? In other words, it's drudgery, you know, but after enlightenment, it's just accepting it. Am I understanding that?
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of vaguely remember that koan. Can't remember who it was. Maybe Joshu, but I think so. It seems like that's pretty much perfectly in line with what I'm talking about. And that maybe brings in some different elements of teaching too. So cutting, carrying wood and carrying water, cutting wood seems very, shows up in a very particular way from an ordinary mind. You know, it's these things that we're doing, you know, they have purpose to them, you know, it's in order to, basically we do things in order to get something else and sort of like that continues on. And almost it's, I think, part of that steering away and steering towards in our life is that, you know, if we could just kind of not do the things that we don't necessarily like too much, or if we can kind of eliminate some things, then our life would be more there, you know, we'd find satisfaction. And that's this up and up down, this vacillation where we sort of don't really like splitting the wood too much. You know, maybe we want a wood splitter where we don't have to, or we want somebody else to do it for us. You know, we kind of continue down those thoughts. But what practice is getting us back to is we can actually live this life free of this being pushed and pulled by those kind of feelings of wanting it to be otherwise, this kind of feeling, well, it could be a little different. It could be a little better. So from the enlightened mind, cutting wood, carrying water is exactly experience itself. The thought of maybe wanting it to come, you know, to be a little different can come up, but then we recognize that's just an idea. So we're doing the task. We're doing it 100%. There's basically no room for dissatisfaction to arise because we're completely, you know, the practice is having, you know, showing up in this 100% way. So very naturally, dissatisfaction can just drop away naturally. We can do what we're doing exactly. So thanks for that example. That's a great koan. There's probably a couple different ones that are similar to that. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
Ken has a question.
Yeah, Ken, go ahead.
Hi, Jed. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. Thanks.
I was really interested to hear what you had to say about life's ups and downs. It reminded me of something I read years ago about life being really equatable to a roller coaster with its ups and downs, and that we had to have the downs in order for the ups to actually be up. And all that we could actually do was sit in the roller coaster's carriage and just hold on for dear life.
Yeah. Could you repeat? I missed a couple of those words. If you could just summarize real quick again. So basically we're holding on for dear life. Basically.
So really we're just sitting in the carriage and just holding on for dear life.
Yeah. That's what it feels like definitely at times. It's quite a ride. And, I think that's the thing that sort of catches us. All the different things, you know, that are happening that are tossing us around. And ultimately, again, these teachings are like the teaching of the Four Noble Truths, teaching of Dukkha is to actually understand the nature of this jostling or this sense of speeding through, like, where are we going? Why are we going this direction? Why does it have to be so jostling? So in everyday life, and that's what the Buddha's addressing when he went out to really get to the core of this matter. And what he found was he found the source of this jostling. And as I was kind of speaking, the sort of the main topic of the talk here is that we're not trying to get rid of the jostling, but understanding the true nature of what's happening. So when we understand, there's the resolution right there together. So yeah, it's life is a wild ride. It's like the more you look at the like the broad picture too, it's kind of like, okay, this is sort of the Wild West in a lot of ways. But there's a lot of beauty too. You know, I brought up art in a lot of different ways. So there's inspiring and encouraging things, exciting things that are encouraging too. You know, it's sort of that electricity of you know, different things that may come up for us, or inspiration of watching people. I saw a story on some Buddhist monks who are doing a pilgrimage across, I think, the United States. they're sort of being helped by people and police. It's sort of a peace march. And it looked like maybe they're from the Tibetan tradition or maybe Tibetan born, but I should look at more of the details. But I saw the story and in the amidst everything in the world that's going on, you know, invading other countries and just whatever else. It seems like it's something new every week, but there's these images of people who are dedicating their lives to caring and non-judgment and seeing them make efforts in life. So there's beauty out there too. So the beauty is right here, actually. So we can express that same caring, I think, when we really put our heart into it. So thanks, Ken.
Thank you. I just want to thank you for your talk, Jen. I just wanted to tell you I appreciated your pointing out that dukkha is not a teaching about good or bad. You know, because I think when people hear dukkha, they start thinking of dukkha as bad.
Yeah.
And dukkha is pointing out something bad. And I remember that Andrew used to bring his son here when he was really young. And he heard the teachings and he heard it with such clarity. Do you remember this? I might get it exactly wrong, but
what was that?
His teaching is so cool. He said, "Dad, sometimes dukkha is really heavy. And sometimes it's funny." That to me seemed about as perfect a teaching on dukkha as I'd heard.
Yeah, that's right. Holy cow.
Well.
Yeah, it's pretty magical. My experience of being in that Four Noble Truths class by you, Steve, and Steve Hagen, that you get a sense somehow. And it's almost like you got to hear a kid say it to like actually confirm how you feel about what these teachings are saying to us. And then, yeah, that beauty comes up. You recognize something. And then also, I think, compassion. You know, we feel the compassion part of this too is right there with that teaching. So that's it, yeah. That's a great one.
I'll tell Sarni I got brought up this morning at Dharma Field. He'll get a kick out of that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.